But also, it's a very emotional thing, and I think that's why some days you can't do yellow for some reason, or one day might be an orange day, and I don't know what the answer, don't know why it's like that, but I definitely find that.
I'm Bob Acton, and I'm here today with Barry Stedman. Barry is a potter and painter from England whose work I really enjoy. He uses an abstract, painterly approach to his ceramic work, and today we talk about his process, his color choices, and some of the mysterious experiences artists have with color. Barry works with a terracotta clay base and then uses slips to apply his bright colors to produce pieces that have a truly organic feel to them. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Welcome to Color and Ceramics, the podcast for ceramic artists who want valuable ideas about using color from leading artists and world-class experts. Here's your host, Bob Acton, a sculptor and ceramic artist who's fascinated with color and how potters, sculptors, and artists use color in their work. Tune in as he talks with his guests about color, techniques, and the impact of color on people and art itself.
Barry, welcome to the Color and Ceramics podcast to talk about color and surface decoration. I'm really pumped that you're here. So thanks for coming on board.
No problem. Very pleased to be and very pleased to have a chat with you.
Yes, that's awesome. You know, when I look at your work, I see this deep, brilliant colors that you use on your pieces. And, you know, when I look at your work, it's almost as if I'm taken to a new land, almost a new planet. Like, it's so vibrant and has that effect on me. And I'm really intrigued about your approach to color and surface design. But when I look at your work, I see that your work really probably represents years of hard work. And so I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your journey to get you here today.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So I came to ceramics, I suppose, late. I was just in my early 30s, and I started doing an evening class in ceramics, actually. And obviously I got hooked on it, so I wouldn't be doing it now. But I do think one of the reasons I took to ceramics is because previous to that, I did a lot of drawing and painting and mark making, which I still do now, and I still love it just as much. But I think I was looking for a way of being more abstract. I did a lot of drawing and painting outside, but very figurative. I drew what I saw again, and I still do that now. But ceramics struck me as being immediately abstract, particularly vessel making, which I took to straight away. That was my thing. And I thought, I've got this abstract object straight away that I can apply color to. So right from the start, that's what I was drawn to. And really, I've carried on more or less doing the same thing. And I started an evening class, and then I started two evening classes. And then I decided I would either have to go with it and really push what I was doing and try and get better at it. And to do that, I'd have to probably go to college. And at this time, I had my own business. I had a small shop selling flowers and plants and a little bit of fruit and veg and things, and then had a little floristry business going alongside of that. And I quite enjoyed that. I knew that wasn't really what I wanted to do. But because I had my own business, I was able to take some time, and I studied 2 days a week doing an HND, a high national diploma, in 3D design at a local college. And I did that for 3 or 4 years, actually. It was a 3 year course, and I did learn loads. And then when I finished there, I managed to get on the degree course at Westminster Harrow, which was a fantastic ceramic course. And I went into the second year on that. And by doing that, that really helped. And I knew then that that's what I wanted to do. But again, I did it part-time, so I was working at the same time. And then I managed to get, while I was on that course, I managed to get a job as a technician at the college where I'd done my original study. So I was a ceramic technician for a while, and then I began to teach the evening class that I'd been on, and then I started teaching on the foundation degree course as well. And all of that stuff massively increased my knowledge, because I had to help other people all the time with what they were doing. So I ended up with quite a sort of wide range of skills in different areas. So that's sort of how I got into it, really.
So Barry, in your focus on color and surface design, like, what motivates you? What do you get excited about these days? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Good question. I think it's funny, because a few years ago, about 3 years ago, I did a body of work and I took it to a gallery, and it was had very minimal color. And I had to do a little talk. Some people came to the show, did a little talk, and I said, yeah, this is my new work, and it had hardly any colour at all. And I said, going forward, I shan't be using so much colour. And then ever since then, I've got more and more and more into colour. And I just think that is my thing. And I think of my vessels in the same way as I think of my painting, and colour is almost the starting point. So if I go out for a walk, I'm totally influenced by what's going on around me. I love nature, I love flowers and plants, all those things are an influence on what I do. And I do quite a lot of painting outside and sketchbook work. So colour is really at the root of my practice.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm reflecting as you are talking about my experience. I'm a big gardener, and so if I get out in my garden, I'm thinking also about form and the shapes of flowers and so on.
Yeah.
But you've really focused yours on the color, whereas the shapes, it sounds like, are less important.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a really good observation. And the forms that I make, although I do, I obviously love making, and I love form, I love vessels, but I do think the forms I make are fairly sort of familiar forms. They're fairly straightforward forms, and in a way, I want the form to be almost, I don't know how to describe it. I don't want you to recognize the form as a particular thing. So it's the reason I don't make jugs or cups or things like that. I tend to think of them as, I quite like open forms that feel like they're still growing. And I want the color to infuse the form so it becomes this complete colored thing. And it is important that it's a vessel, because, you know, it contains air, and it's got a sort of a definite life that people recognize in vessels. But I don't want them to be seen as particular functional forms, or necessarily even things to use. It's fine if you do, but that's not my motivation for making them. But, you know, when perhaps most of my forms are wheel thrown, and when I'm throwing, I feel like I'm doing the under painting or the underdrawing for a finished painting. So it starts right at the beginning for me, this sort of mark making. It starts with the throwing.
Mm-hmm. It seems when I look at your work, I see this, what I might call an organic form, in the sense that it's, yes, we can see it's a cup or a plate, but in a way it sounds like what you're doing is creating this organic form that is somewhat formless, but it also works to be your canvas for the color.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's true. I always think, because I do paint on canvas as well, it feels very different in as much as what I like about painting on ceramics or an all-round form is that you've not got a single viewpoint, whereas on a canvas it's a very distinctive shape that you paint up to the edges and you make something happen within these edges. Whereas with a vessel, I feel, you know, I can move it and change my viewpoint the whole time. You can, most of my work is small enough to handle and pick up and turn around. And I think that's one of the big differences between painting a form like that, a vessel form, and a canvas. But yeah, I do feel like, I feel if once I've made my form, because quite often when you're throwing, you throw a group of forms and you've got them there in your studio and you think they're never going to be nicer than this because it's the wet clay and the soft marks and the, you know, I always have to put a dent in somewhere or tear a rim or something. And it's such a lovely process. And when it's sitting there wet off the wheel, you think it's never going to be nicer than this. But for me, that's the sort of starting point of I have to somehow introduce color and form. And it makes it something else. It's become something different. And it is quite interesting because quite often the forms that you think have worked really well when you've thrown it on a wheel and you've put them on the side and you're throwing the next one and you're looking over and seeing what you think of that one. Quite often it's not the nicest one when you've painted it and glazed it, you know, there's something's changed, you know. It's really fascinating. It's interesting. And of course, even though probably colour is my main thing, I do spend a lot of time thinking about rims and, you know, how the base hits the surface and whether you have a shadow underneath, all those things that potters think about as well, you know, they are important.
Mm-hmm. It really, when I think about a painting, it's two-dimensional. For the most part.
Yes.
And your work is, you're really creating three-dimensional canvases, if we think about it that way. And each of your pieces is different. You might have a similar form, but unlike a potter, a production potter, who's repeating the same form over and over, yours has a real, as I've said in the past, an organic form, so that it's a bit different, like each flower in the garden is a little different.
Yeah, that's a really nice way to put it. And I purposely try and not make them the same. I mean, I'm not really a potter, I'm a maker, and I make, you know, I'm not great at throwing, but I can throw fairly fluently now. And whatever I'm making, I'm always trying to change it in some way or make it slightly different, even if it's part of a series that's the same. I do quite like to change it in some way, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I always think whenever I start a new batch of work, I don't know if you feel this yourself, that you almost feel like you're starting from scratch again. You know, it feels, you feel that little bit of uncertainty about what's going to happen, you know, and I think that's quite good, really.
Yeah, I agree. I'm actually just starting a new set of work myself and recognize that feeling. I was down in my studio yesterday and I could feel that little bit of anxiety about starting this new work and it's become familiar now.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? And I sort of think that we all need that sort of little bit of edge. I was trying to look for that little bit of edge when you do something and you do feel like you want to try and push it a bit further. And then, and of course, when I'm painting color on things, you really don't know how it's going to turn out. You know, you can see it. All my work at the moment is slips, colored slips. And, you add the stain to your slip and it changes the color basically. So when you're painting it on, you've got your tests and things, you sort of know how it's going to come out, but you don't really, especially if you overlay colors and things, you're trying to imagine how it would be. So there's always that element of surprise or anticipation when it comes through. And, and you get a certain amount of hesitation before you start, just for that reason, But that's what keeps you going, really.
I agree. I think that's a kind of a crazy part of ceramics, in the sense that, a painter can put paint on a canvas, and what you see is what you get. But with clay, often that's not true, and the potter has to know the technical aspects of their work so well to be able to predict it as best as they can.
Yeah, it's a bit mad, isn't it? quite yeah. Sometimes they don't quite know why we're doing this.
Yeah, but it is a bit addictive, isn't it?
Oh, it's totally addictive, and sometimes. I don't know about you. Sometimes you can get a bit down about it. I had a firing at the weekend and technically everything went really well and they were quite big pieces, but they didn't really, the marks just weren't right and they just didn't have enough zing about them. And and it was quite disappointing and it does affect you. You spend the day thinking, why did I do that? Why do you invest so much of your sort of emotional energy into these things? But then interestingly, I looked at them the next day and a couple of them, I started pairing them up with something else. I put them on a white space. I've got quite a small studio, so there's not a lot of space. So when I do photography, I lay out a white sheet and separate it out. And they did improve a little bit. But it's quite interesting because I've noticed if I make something bigger, if I'm too precious about it and I think, it's quite a lot of materials I'm using here, I need to get this right. When you do that, you almost invariably lose something. And it's a bit of a lesson there that don't try and control it too much, maybe.
It's interesting. I think that's a common theme over many of the people that I've spoken to on this podcast, is about not making pieces too precious or the process too precious, because you never know what's going to come out.
No, it's true. It's difficult because you do think about your carbon footprint and you not wanting to waste materials or things like that, but certainly in my process, it's hard to work any other way, really, because it relies on a sort of spontaneous approach. And, I know some days my mark making is much better than other days, and you haven't always got the luxury of choosing when, you've got to go for it. But one of the things I've noticed is if I find a piece that I like and it turns out to be one of my favorite things, the biggest mistake is to try and recreate that again. Each piece I do has to have its own sort of energy and you can take ideas from your previous work, but it whenever I've tried to recreate something, it's never had as much sort of interest and vigor as perhaps if it's come from somewhere new, possibly.
And I love your use of the word energy within the piece. And, you know, when I looked at your work, that's what I got, was a feeling of energy. And part of that came from your color palette. What inspires your color choices?
So most of my color choices, well, it's the love of the color itself. As you can probably guess, I love abstract painting, and I've got a lot of books on painters that I like. You know, I love abstract expressionist painting, but I love painting of all sorts, and I love painting myself. So a lot of my color choices come from work that I've done on paper or in my sketchbook, but also it's a very emotional thing. And I think that's why some days you can't do yellow for some reason, or, you know, one day might be an orange day. And I don't know don't know why it's like that, but I definitely find that. And also, you know, when you work in ceramics, particularly if you're throwing, I think you are constantly working in series, and one thing follows on for another. So, you know, you might do a piece that's got a little patch of green, and you might think, actually, I really like that green, and that starts you off on the next thing. You think, I really want to make that green a dominant color in this series. So then you think, you know, that reminds me of something in the garden, or it reminds me of, I was using this particular green at the moment, and I'd been reading all about Monet's last paintings, his big water lily paintings. I read a really interesting book about it, and I was flicking through some books, and he had this boat that he used to have as a floating studio, floating on the Seine, and he'd done a painting of it, and it was this particular green that I absolutely loved. And I came across in one of the stains had this sort of similar feel about it. So at the moment I'm very into this particular green. And then you sort of think, well, what you think about complementaries of green and pinks and reds and things, and you start playing around with those. And so it's quite organic, really. And I do find the less I plan it in advance, then the better it often is.
Mm-hmm. It seems like important to you to honor that, I don't know whether to call it spirit or that idea within yourself, and to let yourself be free with it, much like your mark making, which is really a free way to make marks.
Yes, definitely. And I think that is all through my practice. And I think really that's the sort of starting point of how I do things. I don't really like doing things that are I like to work quite quickly and quite energetically, and I choose things that allow me to do that. So for instance, a lot of my throwing, I don't turn foot rings on things very often. Not because I don't enjoy it, because I actually do quite enjoy doing that, but I quite like the idea of having wet clay and throwing it on the wheel, and having that sort of life appear in front of you, and sort of holding that life without then going back to it and doing something else. And I'm a little bit like that with my mark making as well. So I do think the whole point of doing it for me is to give things life. And I suppose that's my definition of life, is to have sort of, as you said, energy and certain passion in what I'm doing.
You know, and of course, art doesn't just end with the making of the piece, but also involves the person using or observing the work. And we've talked a bit about that here today. I'm really interested in the psychology of color. You know, given yes. your bold work, I imagine you might be as well. But what do you think, or how does the choice of color influence the overall mood or message of your ceramic artwork?
Well, I think it does. You know, I mean, I think it's, I mean, it's not for everyone. That's the first thing to say. And if I do a show or something, there'll be a certain people that all love the idea of sort of bright, vibrant colour. And then there'll be those people that prefer not. But I definitely think it does act as a sort of strong emotions about things, you know.
Yeah,
definitely.
Very cool. I also know you do some work with Edmund de Waal. I'd love you to tell us a little bit about your work, but I'm really intrigued by the contrast of your sort of beautifully colored work on a terracotta body to Edmund's porcelain work. Tell us how you sit in both of those worlds.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I didn't expect to be so involved with Edmund's work. I was very lucky because Edmund was a professor at the university, and as part of our course, we all were asked to choose either an artist to go and work with or maybe go to a factory or whatever your interest was. And I was lucky enough to be placed with Edmund, and so I went and did a work placement at his studio in South London. You know, and I purposely wanted to do it. I mean, obviously, because I like his work, but also that it's very different approach to my own work, you know. And it's, you know, much, much better to learn from someone that has perhaps a different approach to you. And yeah, I carried on, and I was offered a part-time position in his studio, and he was expanding his studio and moved to a bigger space. And I've been lucky enough to go along on his journey as well, which is completely different to mine. And I get to work with porcelain, and it's surprising, you know, I've learned a huge amount by working with him, and it's surprising how ideas do cross over, you know. And his work is also very fluent and very organic, and the relationship between words and objects is something that I'm really interested in as well. So I've sort of been lucky to work in that. So I fire the gas kilns there, and we talk about ideas that he's got. And yeah, it's very, very good for me.
Thanks so much for sharing that. I wondered if you could share an idea that you might have for another ceramic artist who is wanting to develop their unique style. You've shared some great ideas here today, such as working in series, working with a mentor, and so on. But I wonder if you have any advice for a young artist.
Well, I do think it's, you know, I was lucky enough, both the college courses I did encouraged experimentation, and we tried all sorts of things, and we were also encouraged to look outside of ceramics and look at the world of art. and find a direction that you're interested in. And it's definitely worth trying all different areas, and you won't know in advance, probably won't know in advance until you start doing stuff, and then you'll find that there's a particular area that you become passionate about. And then I think you just have to keep going with it. And there's not some sort of magical final point you get to. You just keep going, and you find the things that make you want to go in the studio each day. And it's important to, I always think, if you know what the next thing might be, then you're probably in quite a good place. You know, if you know, well, I've done this and now I could do this, and that could lead to this. And I think when you feel like that, then you know you're on quite a good path. But it's definitely not a straight line. You definitely go down lots of blind alleys, and there's definite disappointments, but you just have to live with them for a little while and then move on to the next thing.
It's kind of like going for a walk in the forest, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah. The good thing about ceramics, I think, is it allows you, you know, this is something I learned from Edmund as well, it allows you to combine the things that you're interested in. So, you know, making might be one thing, but, you know, you may well be interested in books or nature or music, you know, and there's a pathway to incorporate all that in your work, you know, which I don't think I realized when I started out. And now I realize that all the things you're interested in actually show up in your work in different ways. And also, maybe you don't have to explain that. Maybe that's why you make the work, because you can't explain it in words, but the work allows you to express things that you can't say.
It is true that often our customers or people who see our work ask us artists about, why did you do that? And does that have some particular meaning that you can tell me about? When in fact, sometimes we don't have an answer for that.
No, it's very true, isn't it? Quite often we don't have an answer. Or maybe we have an answer later on when we look back on things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, unless that's part of your practice and that's something you want to develop, I don't think you necessarily need to know why you've done something. Mm-hmm. I mean, you need to do things with purpose, and things how you do things matter, but whether you have to explain why you do things, I'm not sure.
Yep, I would agree. I think that it's really important to experiment, to try new things out in a purposeful manner. And sometimes we're not sure why we're making the piece we are, but we're still doing it with a purpose, particularly maybe around an exploration of an idea or a technique.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and quite often you're not quite sure what that idea is and what it is you're trying to, but that I quite like that. I quite like not knowing before I start, you know. And sometimes that creates problems, but for me, it's like if I'm painting, I don't very often picture the end thing. I might picture the type of feeling I want from something, but for me, the joy is in the making, you know, and developing it as I go along. I really, that's the side of the work that I really enjoy. And it used to bother me that I didn't have strong ideas of finished things, and you know, I'm not particularly conceptual about things, but now I've accepted that that is the way I work, and I know that if I start something, then I will find a thread of interest somewhere in it, and then I can go along with that. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's okay to start something without knowing what you're going to end up with. Definitely.
That's a very important lesson that you just shared, was this idea that if we think about what we should be doing, then that can get in the way of what's truly important to us.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and it's quite hard when you're selling things, and you know, it's part of your living, it's part of your income. You know, you do need to make some things that work, but you know, you need to find a way of still allowing your sort of freedom and your voice to come through. Yeah, I don't know. And you know, having, it's like when you do your sketchbook, you know, you're not going to, you might look on Instagram and see these people with the perfect page on every page of the sketchbook, but I'm sure that's not the reality of life. Certainly not with me. And every firing, there's some that I much prefer than others, you know. Sometimes they're not very nice at all, so they don't make it out into the world, but I suspect you have to have those, you know.
Barry, I want to say a big thank you for being with us here today. I think some of your ideas have been fabulous, and my hope is that our listeners can really capture some of the lessons and ideas that you've got to help them improve their practice.
Well, that's been really nice chatting to you, Bob, and thank you for letting me waffle on a little bit.
Well, thank you. We had a very organic conversation here today, much like your work.
My work. Yeah, exactly.
That's
great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Color and Ceramics Podcast with Bob Acton and his guests. Please help others find the podcast by subscribing to this podcast wherever you find your podcasts, such as iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, or other podcatchers. And don't forget to give us a review. We'll see you next time.